up before the dawn. And I really have enjoyed my stay, but I must be moving on. Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne, I'm an early morning lover, and I must be moving on. Believe in what they say is the undisputed truth, but I have to have things my own way to keep me in my youth. Like a ship without an anchor, like a slave without a chain, just the thought of those sweet ladies as they shimmer through my veins. Now I'm going shining, shining like brand new. I know I look behind me, my troubles will be through.
To talk with George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Hey, there was a birthday last week, Tuesday, to one of the founders. You worked with Art Bell when they developed Coast to Coast. Happy birthday to Alan Corbeth, a genius, a friend, and a wonderful human being. And I don't know how old Alan is. I think he's older than me, for sure. But happy birthday, Alan. Indeed. You're a wonderful, wonderful person, and I hope you had a great time. By the way, hello to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations. Of course, that list continues to grow. We added 4 more affiliates to the list this week. Those of you listening on Streamlink, various chat rooms listening on your favorite radio station, the ImaginativeWorlds.com group. They call themselves the Explorers, the Fantastic Forum Pirates, the Yahoo chat members, people listening with the National Radio Club. They all get together and listen to Coast to Coast and Sorcery, IRC, and the many, many various groups and chat rooms that sit by their radio tight on a nice, quiet night and listen, perhaps with a crackling fire, of all the stories and the mysteries of the mind. I was producing television shows back in Detroit, various TV stations there. They used to call me Captain Bazaar. That was my nickname. They never called me George. It was just, hey, here comes the captain, or Captain Bazaar. To the phones we go. Wildcard line, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, sir. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Calling from right here in Los Angeles, actually.
Oh, great. It's a great
town. And it's
town.
Good to have you back at the normal time, let me say.
Yeah, it's fun. Boy, we've got some tense things going on, though, with freeway shootings out here now, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Not good.
Anyway, I have a story I'd like to tell you.
Okay.
About 7 years ago, I was camping in Northern California, and at about 1 or 2 in the morning, I got up to go use the campground bathroom. As I'm walking there, out in the distance, I can see this reddish light. And it's getting closer to me. And eventually it gets close enough that I can see it's a metal sphere about the size of a soccer ball with flashing red lights on it.
But it's that small.
Yeah, about the size of a soccer ball.
All right.
And it's just gliding along rather quickly. And at its closest to me, it was only about 2 feet away from my face, so I could see it pretty well. And I tried to go after it, but it was moving too fast, and I was not dressed to go over uneven terrain in the dark.
What do you think it was?
To this day, I have absolutely no idea.
How weird. Well, I mean, could it have been a flashing balloon or anything like that?
It was pretty clearly metallic.
Okay.
And it was like almost, it was shiny. You could see your reflection in it.
And you didn't see any propulsion with it?
No, it was gliding so smoothly. It was, yeah.
You know, when you were first talking about this, and I said, is it that small? Mm. What if, and I bet it's possible, that you could have intelligent life, and let's say like small humans, like maybe the size of an ant?
Yeah.
There's no reason why size couldn't, you know, be that small and still intelligent. If that's the case, it wasn't a small object to them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's huge.
But, yeah, to this day, I have absolutely no idea what the thing was.
How would you like to see it again?
Oh, definitely.
Catch it with a fishnet or something.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you, sir.
Next up, let's go to our other wild line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, welcome to the program. Just talked to some people in Nashville yesterday, as a matter of fact. Great town.
It's pretty pleasant. You know, I'm out here close to the lake.
Well, you're in God's country then.
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, I wanted to say a doctor, what's his name?
Oh, Dr. Morgus.
Yeah, he inspired me to call for the first time tonight. I've listened to this program for about 6 years or so. And my father went to Vietnam April 1st, 1967, stayed there till 1970 sometime, I think like August. So he worked for the private sector.
Okay.
And oh boy, those guys are spooky. Boy, he said he just never seen anything like it in his life. They come to the house one afternoon.
Who's they?
They said they were. I think they were feds or...
Oh.
See, my dad ordered Soldier of Fortune magazine.
You mean like the old Men in Black, that kind of thing?
Yeah, something like that. But,
okay.
See, my dad just got back from Vietnam, not been back but a year or so, and he ordered Soldier of Fortune magazine just to look at the... You know, he just liked looking at the thing.
Well, you know, he's a military guy, and a lot of military guys like that magazine.
Well, yeah, and anyway, the next thing he knows, he gets a knock at the door, and it, you know, my grandmother, he's laid up in bed, exposed to Agent Orange. He only weighed like 100 pounds, you know, when he got back.
Oh God.
And yeah, it's affected me too. If I stay in the sun too long, I get white blotches on my skin and everything, and you know. It attacks the nervous system, so you're just kind of tired all the time.
And of course, there's denial that,
you know,
I'm
very intelligent, but you know, I didn't make it through high school.
Because it affected you that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm very intelligent. You know, at least I think I am. I don't know. I'm probably not as smart as Mr. Dr.
Morgus. I don't think any of us are as smart as Dr. Morgus.
He's a cool cat, but I definitely want to be a part of what you guys are.
Yeah, he's going to send me the information, and we'll see what happens.
My father is probably somebody you want to talk to.
Oh, so he's still alive?
Of course he is.
Good.
Yeah, he stays out of the sun like he's supposed to do. He's got, you know, 100% tags on his car. He's got the DOD sticker on the front of his car and everything.
All right, but why would...
But I'm not sure he'll talk to you.
Why do you think we should talk to him, though? What do you think he could tell us?
A lot of things.
About? Give me a hint.
About, you know, see, the government doesn't want the guys who actually... done, you know, the deed, you know, they don't want them to talk about, you know, to really talk about it, you know, what actually happened. You know, my dad cannot be interviewed.
You mean happened over there?
Yeah, happened over there, and he knows a lot about I don't know everything what my dad did. He talks about it, he talks about this, whatever, brings it up, like something in a movie.
Well, let me ask you this. When you say he was in the private sector, what kind of company did he work for?
He was Special Forces. He worked for Lockheed Martin before the war. He was a layout man for the Galaxy.
So he never really told you what his job was over there.
Well, he was recon, three-man team.
Interesting. How far up did he go? Did he go all the way up to the north?
He retired Master Sergeant.
All right. But I bet he was in North Vietnam, I bet.
He was Cambodia, Laos.
Did he ever tell you about
everywhere.
Did he ever tell you about POWs?
As a matter of fact, he one of his jobs was to go out with only a camera and a knife and to recon POW camps and get those guys out of there.
Did he
I'm
ever?
Very nervous talking to you. I'm not even sure I'm supposed to be.
Well, we'll cut it short pretty soon because I got some other calls.
They'll take everything we got.
Well, we don't want that to happen to you. You feel
they've given us a lot, but they'll take it.
You want to jump off now? You feel safer if you do that?
Well, I'd like to give you my information.
You want me to put you on hold?
Yeah.
All right. We'll let you talk to Tommy off the radio. Tommy, the wild card line. Take it. Let's go to our scariest moment hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, welcome.
This is Linda. I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Hello, Linda.
Hi. Hey, I wanted to tell you about a story when I was a youngster. I lived on the Oregon coast, and my sister, who's 10 years older than I, we were walking at dusk along the shoreline, sunset, getting kind of dark.
Oh, yeah.
And we were kind of close to the trail, headed back up to the bank. And as we were walking along, there was the driftwood that accumulates by the bank. And there were these demonic people. They were dressed in, I guess the only description I can give you, attire that looked like Ku Klux Klan, but they were in black.
Okay.
And they came chasing after us.
How many?
Maybe about four.
Ooh.
And my sister and I looked at me and she said, run. So we ran up the pathway, we ran home, about a block from the ocean, and ran in the house and said, Mom, guess what, So she gets in the car, she kind of goes, sure, girl. So gets in the car, drives to the bank and looks over, and they're not there. And I guess to this day, I am still scared to think of what would have happened to us had they actually caught us.
Well, let's not even speculate about that.
I don't want to go there, no.
You don't want to go there. You're safe and sound, and that's all that matters.
Right.
But you know what? I feel sorry for somebody else who might have been there.
That's true. That's true.
And then you have to wonder, how often did these people do this?
That's true. And they looked like they were adults. They didn't look like they kids pulling pranks or anything. They were grown people, at least in size.
Did you notice if they had any weapons with them?
No, they were hooting and hollering at us and just chasing us.
Even if it was a joke, it's not very funny.
No, that wasn't funny at all. So you never know what their intentions were, but
no, not at all. Okay, I'm glad you're okay.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye.
So I'm following some stories here. Jennifer, remember the story of this woman, this bride's. She was about ready to get married or something. They're reporting that Jennifer Wilbanks was found alive in New Mexico. I don't know if you've been following this story. She's the missing Georgia woman in a very strange, strange story. I don't have a lot of information about this, but it says that she is found alive in New Mexico. So if there's any updates, we'll just pass them on to you. That's a story that some of you might have been following about the missing Georgia woman. Family offered a reward. Strange. They were giving polygraph tests to the uncle, to the groom, and she seems to be. Well, I can't say if she's okay or not. Just says she's found alive. So we'll follow up on that. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
George, it's Rachel.
Rachel, the Rachel?
Yes, the Oscar-possessing Rachel.
Well, how are you? You're now calling in, huh?
Yes, George, you said a prayer on the radio for me the other night.
Yes, we did.
2 weeks ago. He left after that. I heard so many strange noises and growling, and he finally left, and he told me, he always has the power to come back to me. But I'm so scared, George, because he said he's going to go into a local affiliate of Coast to Coast. And I heard him talking to this person, and he said he's going to possess this radio announcer. And he was telling everything about him and his girlfriend and everything else.
What city? What city is this, Rachel?
In North Dakota, in Bismarck.
So he's going to try to possess now a talk show host in Bismarck, North Dakota?
Yes, a Coast to Coast affiliate.
My.
Oh, George, it's terrible.
Well, let's think of one thing first here, Rachel. He's left you.
He's left me, but he told me he's always going to be watching me, and he can come back.
Well, do you believe that?
Oh, George, he's awful. He is the right-hand man of Satan. I am convinced.
Well, let me ask you: were you aware that you had been possessed when he was there possessing you? I mean,
yes.
Did you have any remembrance of this at all?
You know, the minute he came inside of me, George, and the minute he left, I could feel it. It was just an awful, evil feeling. George, he would make me eat snakes and just rabid animals. It was horrible. He was just evil, and then he would laugh. It was just the most disgustingest thing, George.
Well, I'm glad, Rachel, he's gone. Now we've got to worry about this talk show host at this radio station.
And I'm so scared for him because he was talking to the father, and I could hear him talking outside my body. And he was saying everything about this radio announcer, and I don't know how he knew it all. He knew things about his girlfriend and their vehicles and everything.
That
was horrible.
Weird. Now, did this prayer, was that what finally got him to stop possessing you?
I think so. He told me that he cannot stand it because when that prayer was on, he was going crazy inside of me. He said he can't take it, and he was growling. You've heard him growl.
Oh, I've heard him growling. Let me tell you, you know, this then would be the second time only that something has worked on Oscar.
He's done so many exorcisms then. He said there were too many Coast to Coast listeners praying.
He's absolutely right,
Rachel. And wishing him out of me. And I think that's what did it.
Well, and let me stay strong then, Rachel. Stay strong. And as far as the talk show host out there in North Dakota, we better warn him at our affiliate in Bismarck. I don't know who the individual is, Tommy, but you might want to let him know about that just to be on the safe side. Okay? You never know. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Yes, sir.
This is Mike. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Mike.
I have some information for you. Other callers have requested that, if you can, interview the medium Allison Dubois from the TV show Medium.
Oh, yeah, that's come up. Yep.
Yeah, and I have some information that I don't have direct contact information, but some information other listeners may find interesting.
What do you mean information? Like what?
Well, this is from an article that was in last week's Phoenix New Times. She was doing a book signing on the 21st locally.
Okay.
She has a new book, and it's called Don't Kiss Them Goodbye. And I believe the publisher is Simon & Schuster. She's very busy. There's a backlog, or she's a waiting list of 3 years for readings from her, a waiting list of 3,000 people, and a backlog of 200 murder cases.
Mm. 200 murder cases?
Yep.
She must be pretty accurate.
Well, she's very busy, but, because she has a new book out, maybe you could contact Simon & Schuster, request a, obviously, they're selling books.
Well, that's right. All right, we'll put that in the hopper.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. That, of course, is from Allison Dubois, PR person who probably just called. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Yes, I had a story about being when I was in the Navy. Actually, it happened to a friend of mine.
What happened?
I kind of told the story myself. Well, we were out floating off the coast of the Middle East, and he went out for a cigarette, pitch blackout, couldn't see anything on deck at all. And all of a sudden, in the corner, he heard a rustle. And he thought somebody was back there, but asked who was there. Nobody replied. Well, thought it was odd, but, you know, some people want to get away and have to see. So continued smoking a cigarette and heard a rustle again a little bit closer.
Boy, I got to tell you, I could not understand one word you were saying there. Try to call us back with a little better connection. if you would, by the way. If you need to reach me, it's very simple. It's George at coasttocoastam.com, the website. I shall tell you it's coast, and then you do two, T-O. A lot of people get that confused. Coasttocoastam.com. That'll get you right to us. Or you can just do George Norrie, N-O-O-R-Y, georgenorrie.com. That'll take you straight to the coasttocoastam.com website as well. It is that simple. We will be right back right here on Coast to Coast. Our open lines continue.
Gosh, I feel so lucky inside, and I think that I know the reason why. And I think that I know the reason why.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com. Talk with George Norrie, call the wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, this is it. The last night I'm going to talk about the After Dark double CD until close to Christmas and the holidays. So take advantage of it. This is the collector's item, double CD, bumper music, some unforgettable calls to the show, and some great ghost stories. Website, afterdarkcd.com, www.afterdarkcd.com, or you can call 1-800-598-2331. A little bit more information on the missing Georgia bride-to-be found alive in New Mexico. She claims that she was abducted. She's 32 years old, and she somehow escaped. They say her abductors let her go. This is a weird, weird, weird story, but she is safe and sound. Okay, welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and let's go right back to the phones. Wildcard line, your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Mike in Ithaca.
Hey, Mike, welcome.
Got some great news for you and everyone out there, but before I start, I don't want anyone to go out there and try to find them, because these creatures will abandon their eggs and their young if they see a person there that wild. Make do with the video and be happy with that, and see if you can get Lex to post this on the site for everyone to see it. I guess you could consider it a cryptid. This is the ivory-billed woodpecker that was deemed extinct since 1944.
Yep.
And they thought they saw them in Cuba in 87, but they weren't any nesting ones, just transient ones, so they figured those might have died out. They might still be in Cuba, but that's a different species. But the American one was definitely confirmed that it's been found now in Arkansas, and the 7 ornithologists have confirmed sighting, either confirmed by another ornithologist or by a videotape.
And, you know, if there's one, there's got to be another.
Unless they live very long, but probably there's a breeding population.
Yep.
The way you get to the easiest way to get to it, if you search on the Wikipedia, that's Wikipedia, just do a Google search with Wikipedia woodpecker, then follow the links to ivory bill woodpecker, follow those links to Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and you'll get the video. And it would be great to get one of the guests who worked on this project to find them on, either John Fitzpatrick, who's the head of the ornithology lab at Cornell, or Philip Hose, who wrote the book, The Race to Save the Lord God Bird.
Let me ask you, by the way, the significance of the fact that it would be found, and that something that they believed was
extinct,
what does that all mean?
Well, there's several things. One, it's great that it's there. Two, it's a big bird that looks prehistoric and it's beautiful. Three, it means that the ecosystem is probably better off than we thought it was, because if it's still alive, a lot of other things that were probably lost aren't. And the other thing is that when people were giving it the same kind of credulity that they would give Bigfoot sightings or UFO sightings, and maybe people will take people who've seen other unusual things more seriously to see that the people who were seeing it all along weren't off the wall after all.
How big is this bird?
It's only when you look it's only 20 inches, which isn't that, but for a woodpecker it looks like a monster.
That's a big Woody woodpecker. He looks like Woody, doesn't he?
I've seen the pileated woodpecker, which is very similar, and when you see a big woodpecker like that, you don't forget it. Woody was an acorn woodpecker. These are ones that actually store hazelnuts and acorns in holes in wood, and they're social. They have workers and queens, like social insects, just like the Harris hawk has workers and queens. And Jack Horner thinks that certain duck-billed dinosaurs, like Maasauria, which is the good mother dinosaur, that this not only was fed by its mother when it was a helpless chick, but by its siblings as well. And many birds are fed by siblings as well as their parents.
How do you know so much about birds?
I'm a naturalist. I'm just, like, really into animals and critters.
Since you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, big time. My father took me out in the woods since I was 2.5, and my sister, too.
Yeah, that's great.
Incidentally, I want to tell you one other thing real quick.
Sure.
I wanted to say two things the last time I was on. You didn't have time. This guy called in about the two brains theory, and there's a wonderful poem about that. You know, many dinosaurs have a second brain in their solar plexus like we did, but
right.
It was discovered in dinosaurs before it was found in humans. And there was a guy named Taylor, forget his last name, but he wrote this beautiful poem. And if you put it in quotes when you search on Google, either search "Behold the mighty dinosaur," in quotes, or put in quotes, "If one thought skipped his forward mind, 'twas rescued by the one behind." Or the other string you might want to search is, "Not only for his power and strength, but for his intellectual length." If you search one of those lines in quotes, you'll get the whole poem. It's just a very funny poem about how the dinosaur with two brains must have found life, and
Okay, now I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
Did you see the story where they found the 40-million-year-old whale bones in the middle of the desert in Egypt?
You know what? Oddly enough, I only heard about that.
Now, you got to check into this one.
Yeah.
This is a great story.
But whales are about that old, aren't they?
Yeah, but I got to ask you. I mean, that place had to have been an ocean to have
a
whale.
Back that far back, there was a whale called Amblyoccetus, which means the walking whale. It kind of lived like a crocodile.
Yeah, they said this one had little limbs.
Yeah, walked out on the if something did, it lived like a crocodile, and if a monkey or something wouldn't come to the water to get stupid enough to get eaten, drink a drink, and
the whale would go get him.
It'd go out, get up at night, and get the animals while they slept. Walk out on land.
How'd you like to get gobbled up by one of those things?
Well, I'm glad today that the whales we meet tend to be friendly, aren't you?
Do you think Jonah really fell into a whale?
Well, there's one theory that it might have been. It could have been a whale shark, which is a whale as big as a bus. And there's a filter feeder. It just filters plankton out of the whale, but it's as big as a bus. And these can be very friendly. There's a beautiful picture in National Geographic of Eugenia Clark, who's a shark lady, riding, clinging to the tail of this and riding behind, smiling. And this thing swims with its mouth open, filtering food. And you can actually walk into its mouth, walk down its esophagus, walk into its stomach, as long as you got one of those scuba tanks on you. But you can sit there for a while. But if you don't get up and leave again in a few minutes, he'll vomit you out.
You need to be the coast-to-coast naturalist. You're good.
Oh, I'd take you up on that offer. I've got a lot to offer you. But there are other people, too. I don't want to knock myself, but there are a lot of great naturalists.
You're good.
Now
you speak well. It doesn't pay, but we'd like to have you on. Thanks.
Well, thank you, mate.
All right, take care. How about that? Mate, he's from Australia. How about that? West of the Rockies, you're on coast-to-coast. Hi there.
Oh, good morning, George.
Yeah, hi.
Tremendous lover of the show. But, you know, only on your show can we go from, you know, whale sharks and woodpeckers to this, you know, horrible exorcism story I'm about to go. What other show does this?
Nothing. and you know what? And both stories are great.
I think all of us late-night people must be ADD because we're just, you know, one topic to the other. Anyway, let me give you this caveat before I start the story.
Okay.
I'm a believing Orthodox Christian. However, I am extraordinarily skeptical of any supernatural tales I hear, which is probably why I've never called the show before, but this one got to me, George. Story starts, early 1970s, young Roman Catholic seminarian or deacon, I don't recall which, is assisting an older priest in sub-Saharan Africa. They're conducting an exorcism on a woman farming community somewhere there. Anyway, young man records this session and keeps it. 30 years later, United States, and the young, you know, missionary has now become a priest, now teaching in the United States, equipping other young Roman Catholic missionaries for, you know, their various missions. Anyway, he has the opportunity to play this tape of this exorcism that he recorded some 30 years ago in sub-Saharan Africa. And, of course, you know, you've heard exorcisms. There's a lot of the gibberish and the yelling.
And the screaming and profanity
exactly,
and all that
exactly.
stuff. Yeah.
However, on this particular occasion, one of his students starts freaking out when he hears this. All right? Now, they get the young man calmed down, 18, 19-year-old, Brazilian, I believe, and finally ask him, you know, what's wrong? And he says, I understand what's being said. And he translates it. Now, this is really bizarre because not only is he Brazilian, he's from a small tribe, which I believe, last I checked, some, I want to say 12, maybe 15 individuals actually speak this indigenous language of this small tribe, indigenous people in Brazil. Now, George, I mean, you're a smart guy. How is it that a woman in a small place in Africa can speak a language that is spoken only by a couple of people in the jungles of Brazil?
She's possessed.
Freaked me.
It's the only answer.
You know, it's secondhand, but the source is so trustworthy. He's a deeply religious man, a man I trust, and almost like a father to me. I don't even want to think about, you know, that scary side of it, but man, you know what I mean?
So you believe the story?
I do. Oh, absolutely. I believe that he was telling me the truth. I don't have any names, unfortunately, which is why, you know, it's one of those stories. It could be an urban myth, sure. But, man, you've heard enough of that weird stuff. I mean, you know that that's absolutely possible, but that's just one of those ones that brings it home.
That's a great story.
Exactly.
All right, thanks.
Love the story.
All right, keep going.
Bye-bye.
Next up, let's go to our scariest moment hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Welcome to the program.
This is awesome, man. I can't believe I'm talking to you. Just want to wish my mom a happy Mother's Day. I know she's listening in bed, so happy Mother's
Good
Day.
Good for you.
This is, I know you were in the Navy, so...
9 years.
Yeah, I was on the USS Enterprise, and the guy who answered the phone, he goes, you were on Star Trek? And I go, no, the aircraft.
Yeah, that's how young he is.
So educate him.
Yeah.
This was a very scary moment for me. I was just getting off a watch, and I was on the aft of the ship, and we're talking about a big aircraft carrier, walking forward, and I saw this corridor, very dark, you know, and so I want to investigate it.
Yeah.
I walked into that corridor. All of a sudden, the floor was gone from beneath me. Didn't realize it because it was so dark, pitch black. I just instinctively reached my arms out and grabbed the ladder and smashed against the bulkhead. And make a long story short, the next day when I walked back there, looked down, I was, if I didn't grab that ladder, and I didn't see it now, we're talking pitch black. And it was seven flights down.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's like almost an 80, 90-foot plunge.
Yeah, and, you know, each floor is all, we're talking solid steel, and they're supposed to have netting, so just in case somebody does do something like
yeah.
that. And they had none.
None, you would have been gone.
If I just hit wrongly, that would have been it.
You could have bounced off the walls and fell, too.
And just think of the odds of grabbing the ladder and pitch black. The ladder's to the right. I'm walking forward. The ladder was to the right of me. I don't know how. So let's talk a guardian angel.
Absolutely.
Had to be there.
Mike, what a way to go. That is scary.
Yeah, so
it's like
that's
a free fall.
That's my story.
All right, thanks. Appreciate
hey, thanks,
that.
Thanks, George.
Did you ever get off an elevator and you're ready to go the minute the door opens, and for some reason the elevator has not synced itself up with the floor? So it's a little lower, for example, than the floor. And that happened to me a couple weeks ago, and I hit that. There must have been maybe an inch difference, and that's all it takes. I hit that thing, and I almost went flying. But I, of course, being the coordinated one that I am, I caught myself, and I was fine. But I wonder how many people have done that, where the elevator just hasn't synced up yet. The doors open and they're gone. Next up, east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chandler, Texas. Listening to you on 1200.
Welcome to the program.
And it's an honor to speak to you, sir.
Thank you.
And this has been the third time I've had the pleasure of talking to you. Last time, I believe we spoke about my little adventure at Point Pleasant. And I went after the Mothman deal.
Oh, yes. Great story.
Okay. Well, I've got another one. There was an area outside of Louisville in Oldham County called Sleepy Hollow. And you know how some areas tend to be a magnet for supernatural. And like you, I'm a kindred spirit. I grew up just looking into everything, reading everything, interested in everything. We used to go, me and two of my friends, out into this area quite a bit. And if you remember, we drove very hot cars, very fast cars. And that night we were in my car, a Roadrunner, a 440 Tri-Power. And because we did a lot of driving on country roads, I had it fitted with aircraft landing lights on the inside and 1 million candle power.
That's powerful.
Yeah, well, you needed it. To be safe at speed on that kind of road. And we were coming up to an area where there used to be an old wooden bridge. It was called Cover Bridge Road. It was actually a lane and a half wide. There was a right-hand corner. And like I said, there was, you know, I could talk an hour on the incidents, but this one incident has stuck with me all these years, and it happened, like I said, 1971 fall. We came around this right-hand corner, and it was a shallow right-hand corner that was off camber, if you know what I mean. It was leaned the wrong way, tilted where you would slide out. There was a guardrail on the left side, and on the right side there was a sheer rock cliff where they had cut into the road.
Yeah.
There was a van turned over, upside down, and the entire front of this van was crushed back past the seats.
Oh, my. And this was down how far down?
Sir?
Was it down the ravine?
No, it was okay. On the road. It went not the way centrifugal force would have pushed it, but it, opposite of that, into the cliff.
Okay.
And it had spun, and the front, apparently it hit, the front of the van had hit, and it spun around, so the front was facing us. Now, there were two other vehicles there with four men outside. The vehicles, we were pretty savvy guys, and we were pretty fit, and we were pretty confident, and we slowed down to a crawl because we were looking at this thing, and inside of it we could see these lockers, like military foot lockers. There were no bodies. There were no people injured laying out on the ground. These guys were wearing plain clothes. The vehicles were plain vehicles. They were Chrysler product, you know, four-door generics, tinfoil hubcaps, the whole nine yards.
Right.
They all had multiple antennas on the back, and these guys just stood and looked at us, and we just got a feeling that if we stopped, we were going to get...
Yeah, you weren't welcome there.
Yeah, and so we had to go past the road, and we got a pass-covered bridge, which was about 400 yards. Now, my car was fitted with the emergency brake release lockback, so if I needed to turn it around, I just popped the emergency brake and spun it in its own axis. The minute I got to the part of the road that was wide enough, I spun the car, and we decided, hell, we're going back. We'll run the aircraft landing lights. We'll be there and gone before they know. We want to get another look at this vehicle. We just couldn't believe what we were seeing. And we shot back up that road 75 or 80 miles an hour, and, George, there was nothing there.
What do you mean there was nothing there?
There was no vehicles there. There was no major damage there. The van was gone. George?
You're talking just a few minutes from when you passed it up.
A minute, maybe. Minute and a half.
Where'd they go?
George, I don't know. And on top of that, I'm a religious guy. I swear on the cross, I'm telling you the truth. We went the next morning. I got my girlfriend, and we went out the very next morning, and the skid marks, instead of going to the left like they would have on centrifugal force, did a complete right hand, a 90 degree, into this cliff. And the only particles that were left on the ground were a little bit of chrome and glass, and that was it. And that has stuck in my mind all these years.
I mean, do you believe what you saw was real and physical?
Absolutely.
So the big question is how did it disappear so fast?
And if it had been a helicopter that had picked
you would have heard it.
We would have heard it or seen it.
Yeah, you would have heard it, you would have seen it.
I thought about that, and it might have blown the debris off, but there wasn't, I mean, this thing was torn all to pieces.
There's no way a flatbed truck could have gotten there. They loaded it up.
Or a wrecker. I mean, because it was upside down.
And then those other cars gone. There's no way.
Everything was gone. Everything was gone.
What if that cliff or that mountainside, what if it opened up and they just kind of shoved it in there?
You know, George, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I spent hundreds of hours on that road, and I could, like I said, I'd love to have a one-hour spot with you. I could tell you story after story. I even have photographs of an area there. I took infrared photographs of a haunted area there where there was some satanic stuff, and come up with an actual image in a window.
Well, I gotta tell you, as we reach the top of the hour, maybe it was a ghostly accident, but you said you saw pieces of glass and chrome. That doesn't make any sense. That's another weird story, but hey, it's Friday night. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for that call.
Now I sit by my window when I watch the cars. I fear I'll do some damage one fine day. But I would not be convicted by jury of my peers. Still crazy